Radio Bilingüe presents Sounds of Unsung Californians, folk artists who innovate music and cultural traditions and weave them into the soundscape of California. This program is produced in partnership with the Alliance for California Traditional Arts, with funding from the National Endowment for the Arts. I'm Zadie Stavely. Today, Radio Bilingüe is bringing you music and interviews recorded at the 6th Annual San Francisco Son Jarocho Festival, held at the Brava Theater. The festival celebrated and honored the women who play Son Jarocho, the regional folk music of Veracruz on the eastern coast of Mexico, with workshops and a concert by two groups from California, Diapason of Berkeley and Entre Mujeres of Los Angeles, and the Veracruz, Mexico-based group Caña Dulce y Caña Brava. We'll explore the role of women in Son Jarocho and how California women have learned from the tradition of fandango in Veracruz and brought it back to California and made it their own. The music that filled the Brava Theater during the workshops, fandango, and concert was distinctly Son Jarocho, the music of the port of Veracruz on Mexico's Gulf Coast, with its deep Afro-Mexican influence. The plucking on the small, skinny instrument jarana, cascades of notes on the harp, and zapateado, the beat kept by dancers on a wooden platform called a tarima. But this music is also Californian now. It's played up and down the state at fandango parties, marches, and in living rooms. To some, it's become a music of resistance. With each stomp of a shoe or strum of the jarana, the musicians are saying, we, Chicanos, Latinos, we are here. We are part of California, of the United States. The Son Jarocho Festival included some outstanding moments of fusion. Lyrics in Spanish and English, some blues mixed into the Son Jarocho. The Bay Area-based group Diapason play a song called La Vejita, rooted in Jarocho sounds, but with a Puerto Rican drum beat. And a bomba dancer swirling and flapping her skirt to the drum. It's a blending of Caribbean cultures, Veracruz and Puerto Rico, both with their own blends of Spanish, indigenous, and African, that meet again here in California. María de la Rosa is founder of Diapason, a group that has been around for almost 10 years. De la Rosa is a leading cultural activist and tireless promoter of Son Jarocho in the Bay Area. I asked her if she thinks Son Jarocho in California has a unique sound, a California sound.
Yeah, I think definitely. And it's interesting. Okay, I'm going to tell you. So everybody will point to a model organization, which is Centro Cultural de México in Santa Ana. Those guys have it together. They're incredible musicians. They create this amazing community, and they have a sound, but they have very much replicated something that they've taught, and they've been very authentic about that, and it's gorgeous. But that's impossible for me to do here in the Bay Area, I've noticed. And it's because we haven't had one specific place where everybody goes, and one person that we've been studying with, it's been a variety of people. And so I've learned early on that, you know, I have to be who I am, you know. And so I remember in a fandango early on when I started performing, how there were people from different parts of the Bay, different trajectories, as well as friends from Santa Ana, because we used to exchange, we still do. I mean, we'll go to each other's fandangos and stuff, people from LA or whatever. And you could tell where people were from in California by how they were singing, you know, and who knew each other's verses and how they were responding and stuff like that. And I was like, oh my God, that's so cool. And there was a point where people started talking about, oh, you know, it has to have this sound. And there were people who were starting to lean toward this traditional thing, this thing about being authentic, about being, you know, you can only be authentic if you're from Veracruz. And my mentors were saying, you know, that's just, no, you know. And that was kind of proof of it, you know, and really, you know, over and over again, you're going to hear people talk about, if you're going to fandangos in Veracruz, even from town to town, from gathering to gathering, depending on the voice of that community, you need to kind of check in and then adapt to that. And each voice, each community has their voice, and each fandango has its voice. They all have their own way of expressing themselves. And I see that by extension here in California. And there's definitely things that I think that we do differently, but it's because of who we've trained with and who we've been with, and because those maestros have always been be you.
And what significance do you think it has to be playing Son Jarocho or having fandangos in California?
Oh, man. I mean, you know, people talk about Son Jarocho being this activism, you know. But what they were envisioning is, or what they seem to imply, is that it meant that you were out on the streets and all the marches and you were, you know, protesting and you were this and vocal about. And I'm like, you know, that's not what makes Son Jarocho activism to me. That's not what makes it an act of resistance. What makes it an act of resistance is that we do this despite what else is going on. You know, for those of us who, and I'm going to speak from personal experience, I'm not going to say that everybody feels the same way about this, but for those of us who feel who live here as and grew up here, born here, Latinos, and have a culture that we've grown up in, but have felt a need to keep that quiet or not on the outs, you know, or not even not hidden, but you don't. As an example, I wouldn't blare Vicente Fernandez on my radio when I was in college, you know, because I was kind of like, okay, I don't know how people are going to. When I'm at home, everybody gets that, right? So to do something like Son Jarocho, to do something like a fandango like this, that is us and our expression and unashamedly so, it's an act of resistance. It's an act of preserving, conserving.
What do you think, what significance does this have that the festival's all is about women soneras this time and the role of women in Son Jarocho? Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to thank Stacy and Brava for for doing what they're doing, but that's their role and their vision. That's exactly, you know, what they've been here for, is to honor women in the arts. That's always what they do, which I think is important, and the space is important for that. And as far as significance, I think it's important, and I'm glad that it's being done. I think that it's important to recognize that it doesn't mean that women have arrived. We've always been here, you know. It may not always been that we're on the stage, or that people here in the U.S. have seen, but there are, you know, women have always had a role, and they have a very important role. And it's beautiful to see that that's being acknowledged. You know, we've been doing this work for a long time, you know. And I'm not just speaking about myself, because there's a lot of women here in the Bay Area that have been doing a lot of work in, and not conscientiously, not because I'm a woman, I'm going to do this, but because this work needs to be done. And in any community, there are people who are the culture bearers. And a lot of times they tend to predominantly be women. And I think that's happened here, you know. But there are a lot of men in our community who are okay to stand next to us. I mean, my group started, and my experience in music started, because we were working with a group of men who weren't necessarily giving us that space. But that's not always the case, you know. And so, you know, I just want to be really clear on that. And that's why these people are part of my group, you know.
Diapason played at Brava Theater with Artemio Posadas, a National Heritage Fellow and well-recognized maestro of violin and son jarocho. Let's listen to a little more of their music. Listening to Sounds of Unsung Californians, with interviews and music from the 6th annual Son Jarocho Festival in San Francisco. The festival featured the music of women in Son Jarocho, including the group Diapason, who we just heard. I asked founder Maria de la Rosa about the importance of bringing another group, Caña Dulce y Caña Brava, from Veracruz, Mexico, to the festival.
What I have learned from them in the recordings, in knowing them, in watching their growth, is sort of a reinforcement of how I feel about son in general, which is to pay attention to subtleties. You know, most of what I see out there as the professional groups on the stage, and even the people who are coming and teaching us, some of the people who are coming and teaching us, is a very hard-hitting son, which is one is part of the style or can be part of the style, but it's not the only thing. And there's this very quote unquote, this is my quote, a very fat jarana sound, very thick and heavy, which to me is too much if you continue to do it over and over again. And it's a very rock sound and it's very hard hitting. I think that it lends more naturally to Caña Dulce y Caña Brava to not be playing in that way, to be more thoughtful about what they're doing and looking for the subtleties, whether on purpose or not, but it comes out that they have more patience and there's more space in their music. And I know a lot of men artists, you know, male artists that are like that too, and those are the artists that I appreciate more and that I have trained with, that I work with. But that's definitely one thing that I feel that Caña Dulce, Caña Brava represents as a standard, you know. Yeah, I'm going to tell you something. Okay, so I had not maybe like 2-3 years ago, somebody commented to me, male producer, that didn't think that that they could bring a woman artist to the festival because it wouldn't bring the crowd, you know. And it speaks exactly to what I was just saying, you know, because I know, you know, this, who these people they usually brought, and or to a concert venue at all in general, that it wasn't going to sell, you know, it wasn't going to bring the ticket sales. And because, you know, the music is beautiful and everything, and the themes that she's working with are, you know, they're important and all this kind of stuff, but nobody wants to listen to that. It's just too heavy. I'm like, all right, well, whatever. This theater is sold out for tomorrow. Okay, so there you go. Anyway, I fully believe in dynamics in my program, in even within the son that we're doing, even in the fandango, and that's very important about fandango that a lot of people don't understand as well. You can't just do all the, you know, this high energy stuff. There, you know, a true artist in a fandango, a true artist in any form, is going to be so aware of those energies and what's going on and be able to hear them and place them together in the moment to create something that, you know, you can't have something like this all the time, you know, and having this, and that's art. I mean, that's really art, you know. And anyway, so yeah, that's what I see about Caña Dulce, Caña Brava as proof that yes, people do want to listen to something more than just, you know, your head being bashed in by three chords.
Indeed, the theater was sold out for the festival concert and the crowd was going wild. A sign of how popular this tradition is becoming in California.
Como siempre lo he soñado, si contigo amaneciera, como siempre lo he soñado.
Listening to Sounds of Unsung Californians. That was the Son Jarocho group Caña Dulce y Caña Brava from Veracruz, Mexico, founded by Adriana Cao Romero and Raquel Palacios. Here's Cao Romero.
We have been playing with a lot of groups, with many men, with many guys in the group. So we wanted to sound both the jarana and the harp without so many instruments. People have been joining us, different musicians. Now we are five musicians. We are four women and one guy. And our group, the interest, the first interest is to sound like the music that women can do, that we think it is, at least in our group, is more soft and more, and different verses, you know? Like, in order to sing verses that are from a girl or from a woman to a man. Because historically, this gender is more for men. They are the musicians, and the girls or the women are the dancers. But now, and since I was playing, I used to play with a lot of men around me, and it didn't bother me, only that I didn't have really my voice, because even the verses were from a man to a girl or a woman, and I wanted to sound different. This was after many years of playing with men, you know?
That was Los Chiles Verdes by Caña Dulce y Caña Brava. Co-founder Adriana Cao Romero is one of the Son Jarocho musicians who worked to promote the music among young musicians.
They say I'm not so so sure about this, but they say the music was like dying. And I knew many musicians, but they were old people, you know. Like my friends told me, why do you study harp? There are a lot of recordings already. Why do you waste your time in learning the harp, you know? And then people start, like me and some other people, start having the interest in developing the Son Jarocho within the young people. And it also has happened in some other traditions, like Huasteco and Son de Calentano and all those, the music from Sierra Gorda. These fandangos goes more popular in the small towns, you know? And we are willing to sing this music more, and that's why it has grown up. Now there are jaranero musicians in Europe and in South America. Everywhere you go, there are a lot of musicians. It's a music that's not so complicated. See, from the beginning, maybe if you want to learn a little bit more, you have to study. But at the beginning, it's easy, and it's including music.
So one of the things that we're noticing is that the Movimiento Jaranero has extended to California and throughout California, and it's becoming a big deal with fandangos going on.
Yes.
Do you feel like the California musicians have lent anything to Son Jarocho in Mexico?
Yes, I think Son Jarocho music is very inclusive. So many musicians from here, they go and have experience to stay for 1 month or something. And sometimes they get so close that they decide to stay there, like Anna. Anna knew the music, Jarocho music, in a workshop in Austin. And then after that, she decided to go. And then she lived with musicians in Nacayucan, for instance. And she learned how to play that instrument, that big instrument that is not so common that the women carry and play, because she was enchanted with the sound of that Leona, or Guitarra Grande is the name. So people really get in love with the music and with the fandango. I couldn't imagine that I was going to find so many people, knowing people here. And there are a lot. No?
That was Adriana Cao Romero, co-founder of Caña Dulce y Caña Brava. She and others told me, Son Jarocho is an inclusive music. That's nowhere more clear than at a fandango, a community party centered around the music, where everyone, from beginners to experts, get together to play, sing, and dance together. Anyone is welcome. At the Brava Theater, people of all ages filled the lobby to surround the tarima, or wooden platform where people danced. Some folks watched, others belted out verses, beginners alongside the pros. Moms danced with their babies in rebozos, and one young woman held a violin for a little girl to bow along with the music. Fandangos can now be found all over California. Sochi Flores plays jarana and sings with Cambalache and other Jarocho groups in Los Angeles. She explains how Californian musicians began exchanging and learning about fandango from musicians in Veracruz.
Son Jarocho has always been, there have been practitioners coming back and forth all, you know, for decades. And I think that the timing was right. One of our friends had gone to Veracruz and participated, or was part of the encuentro in Tlacotalpan. And then he came back with all this information. And there was this group, Mono Blanco, they were starting a project called El Cazón, which was a Casa de Música Popular. So they were going to give workshops at their center, their community center, and they needed help. So the Chicanos, Chicanas, we got together. We brought folks out. We did a fundraiser here in L.A. and for the Cason. And then we thought, we're going to go over there and see what they're doing with, you know, with this project. And I think that that was the first time that we really... Like, we had been toying with Son Jarocho as musicians. I, in particular, was not, but, like, the Chicano musicians in L.A. were always, you know, playing jaranas, singing, you know. Like, Richie Valens brought it over in the 50s for the first time. It really lends itself to like, lots of people playing it. So I think what it is it lends itself to participation. You don't have to be rock star status to participate in a fandango. So I think that's what was really interesting to us, where people were engaged in building community through this music, through the dance, through the verse, and everybody kind of had a role, had a part, was valued, was contributing, and it was multi-generational. We saw that it was something that families could do together. It was something that we don't have here. So I think that was really, these were important tools for us to bring back.
What is important about fandango to bring to American society?
That it's all kind of encompassing, where you see people who participate through cooking and providing nourishment for the musicians, who sit there and write verses all night and then just kind of like spew them out, or write decimas, who play, who dance. There are people who just go to watch. And it's just kind of like a microcosm of like community, because there's all sorts of characters. And I feel like my family has that same kind of, my family is also kind of experiencing it that same way, where I play and I dance. I don't sing that much. My husband does everything. And one of my daughters is a really good dancer and musician. One of my daughters just cooks and bakes and wants to be in the kitchen, you know? So it's somewhere where we can all be together and still do the things that make us comfortable and feel good, and still be in community and build with other families. I remember this one time when I went with my daughter. She was 4 at the time, and now she's 18. But we went for the first time, and we were staying with Ramon Gutierrez in Jalapa. And everybody decided, all the Chicano contingent decided to go to Jaltipan. Well, Luna didn't want to go anywhere. She wanted to stay with Ramon because he had children. So I thought, you know what? I'm going to stay here in Jalapa with her and hang out. And you guys go, and we'll meet you in Tlacotalpan, where I had never been before either. So we stay. Ramon's kids decide they don't want to go to Tlacotalpan, but Luna's coming with me anyway. So Ramon tells me how to get there. And he says, once you get there, you like take this bus and then take this bus. And I'm thinking, oh my God, I'm going to get lost. But no, I didn't. And then he says, once you get there, you just get off the bus and tell somebody that you're going to the fandango with Doña Juana. Or, yeah, one of the doñas. And then I said, what? Like, and they'll know? You know, I'm from a big city in Los Angeles, you know? And he said, yeah, they'll know. They'll tell you how to get there. So I trusted him, and I did it, and I got there, and I was looking around, and I asked this man, I said, hey, can you tell me how to get to Doña Juana's house? And he said, yeah, I can. Let me take you. And then I thought, okay, well, he's going to want money, or I should give him money, or what if he, you know, I have this big city mentality where he's going to, like, stuff me in the back of a trunk, and, you know, and it's terrible. It's terrible, these biases and these preconceived notions of people that we have. And so he took me and Luna to this lady's house, and he told everybody that I came from Los Angeles, and there was a bunch of people, and I had my luggage, and they were like, welcome, the rest of the group isn't here yet, but we've been expecting you. And they were just so welcoming and so lovely. And I thought, like, I felt like a jerk. And it was just a really beautiful moment. And I just thought, God, you know, like, it gave me hope in humanity. It brought me back to think about, you know, what I do in my community and how, what I can do to kind of like break down barriers. And it was just a really interesting experience for me. It was very impactful.
How does California Son Jarocho contribute or change Son Jarocho in Mexico?
Okay, I'm not sure if we change it. I mean, I'm sure that we,
like
yeah, there's an impact for sure. the most, to me, the most valuable impact has been the relationship building. The models that we use, they're unspoken, and some of them are kind of formal, more formal models of organizing and community building, but the way we kind of like, the way we network with each other, the way we build, the way we like, if Quetzal is gonna have a CD release party, like all the other bands get together and you know, we do a fundraiser for each other. And I think that's something that they've learned from, you know, our organizing, and also some of our kids are also growing up with this binational relationship. It's part of like my kids' lives, and they have friends on, you know, in Veracruz, and you know, they have a couch to sleep on when they travel, you know. And I think that those are really important like life impacts that we're making.
What about the role of women in mm-hmm. Son Jarocho? So tell me a little bit about what you saw in Veracruz and what mm-hmm. has happened since.
Well, in Veracruz, when we first went, like any musical genre, it was dominated by men. It's still dominated by men, but it's dominated by men here too, like any musical genre. But I think that because of its participatory nature, that we're able to break through and make, to form our own groups, like Entre Mujeres. I've been part of groups in LA called Candela, which was an all-female Son Jarocho group. And then I was also a part of another group called Las No Que No, who was just a kind of like a practice group, and it was all women. And I think that it's also been a tool for women to get together and start playing, start writing, and talking about our realities. So, I mean, it doesn't necessarily lend itself to, you know, a feminist kind of framework, but no musical genre does unless we force it, and we force to make those breakthroughs and kind of create our own niche in there. Maybe, I'm not sure. Maybe it's because there's so many roots to it. You know, there's the indigenous, the Spanish, the Arabic, the African, and there's so many roots to it. And we all kind of have those roots in our DNA already. And so it feels like home, you know? So it's very easy for me to build with it, whether it be with, you know, my group, who's three men and myself, or with women. And it depends on and what I want to do and what I want to say and who I want to say it with and to. So with Entre Mujeres, we talk about love, we talk about feminism, we talk about how we grew up. And with Cambalache, sometimes we talk about those things too, but that's me saying it by myself and they're kind of like standing behind me. Or we talk about gentrification, we talk about immigration, you know. So it depends on what we're saying, who we're saying it with. And I think that, like I said earlier, where there's the generosity in the genre, then there's a little crack, then you break through it and you build.
That was Sochi Flores. She was at the Son Jarocho Festival with the transnational group Entre Mujeres. Let's hear a little from them.
Semilla de mi canto, siempre hierba buena.
listening to Sounds of Unsung Californians, with music and interviews from the 6th annual Son Jarocho Festival in San Francisco. We just heard a son from Entre Mujeres. Marta Gonzalez of the Grammy Award-winning Chicano rock group Quetzal is the founder of Entre Mujeres. She's one of the foremost promoters of Son Jarocho and Fandango in California, and she even teaches a class on Fandango in the Chicano Studies Department at Scripps College. I asked her about the role of women in Fandango.
So I think for me, one of the most obvious, I think, answers to that question is the fact that you can walk into a Fandango, like we can walk downstairs right now, and the center is often, more times than not, women at the center of this fiesta. At the vortex of this Fandango is this thing called a tarima. And the women are the percussionists. We're the ones that keep the pace. We're the ones that say which sones go next. We're the ones that say you're going too fast, or we can end the son if we want to by calling una. You know, so they have a very important role in the fiesta itself.
No matter where you are, not just at the festival.
Exactly, absolutely. The Fandango, that's part of the protocol. Now, I think that beyond that, you have seen, not only in Mexico, but here, more and more women picking up the musical instruments as well, right? They've always played jaranas. They're more prominent now. But then also the more lead instruments like the low guitarra, which is called the leona, or the guitarra de zona requinto, or the requinto jarocho, or as singers, there's always been singers. And then they organize a fiesta oftentimes, right? Just kind of like Stacy and all her team here at La Brava, that's what women do in Mexico. They organize a fandango, they figure out where everybody's gonna stay, who's cooking, where the drinks are coming from, who's doing what. And they're responsible for gathering folks. So it's just inspiring, you know? It's inspiring, and I think that's what's common. But beyond that, you have so many women now writing verses as well, so they're kind of deciding the direction of where some of these versos are going. They're influencing the men who may not be as conscientious about, you know, there's a lot of men that write beautiful things about women, but there are some men that write things that could be considered degrading, right? And so, but they have to respond to more than a handful of women now, you know? There's a lot more that will be more vocal, and like they've always been, they've always had their ways of resisting, but I think that because there are more female players playing with those big instruments that are usually reserved for males, and you see that a lot more. So I would say, I would start with the tarima. The tarima has been the central point, and from then on out, I mean, it's you know, they've taken more and more opportunities.
So, on one hand, the maestros from Veracruz and Mexico are teaching you guys, but what do California musicians bring to the movimiento?
Well, I think it's really important. We will always be, in a sense, guests in the actual tradition of what is decided within it, right? But I think that there's very, a kind of, the way in which we enact the tradition that's very different here in the United States, that I think Mexican organizers and musicians have learned a lot from. And one of the ways is the way we organize, right? Transnationally, the way we, and have been very diligent in reaching across transnational borders to sort of support each other in these various efforts. Not just, how can we learn Fandango? How can we learn, build our skill set so that we're able to participate in Fandango better? It's not just that. It's also been about how can we find ways of strengthening our communities through this practice, right? How can we find ways of utilizing this practice to reach other goals like food sovereignty, women's shelter awareness, you know, anti-violence, pro-immigrant sort of stances, right? So I think that in the U.S., I think that they do have somewhat of a political edge because they're resisting and they're making listening and playing traditional music cool for the young folks, right? I think that there's also, for us here in the United States, we're very, I feel like the implementation of Fandango in communities has been much more political in that way, right? And not for everybody, I can't speak for everybody, but it is no accident that in every site that you will find in the United States, from New York, Washington, D.C., the Midwest, to the West Coast, like Seattle and California, all over California, it's no accident that a lot of these groups, let's say they do form performance groups, but they're also part of political movements that are that are in these urgent times, right, that are relevant. They come out for the marches, they come out for all of these other things, or they use the music or and performances to, you know, raise money for this or that. And so I think that it's, we have a, our stakes are very different in why we do this. For Latinos, for anybody that is other than white and just born here in the United States, I think that we, as you have seen, we have been up against, right now, we have been up against a lot for centuries. What the president, current president, is espousing is something that has always been felt. You know, he's just being more irreverent and sort of speaking his mind on the systems that we've always known have been in place. And so for us as Latinos or newly arrived immigrants, I think that the message has always been assimilate as quickly as you can, don't have memory, forget your language, just submit, you know. And I think that this practice, the fact that it's participatory, defying capitalist logic, the fact that it is, you know, families, entire families can participate, that's another, you know, it's community-based. And the fact that it's in Spanish and there's poetries in Spanish and, like, you know, it's a form of maintaining culture. And so it's defiant in that way as well, right, socially. So, and on top of that, people always arrive at this other higher critical consciousness when you're in this practice, because it's just part of the ethics of sort of continuing to be critical and to learn more, of course, to participate. But also it just always leads to something else. And I've seen it time and again in different sites across the United States.
You founded Entre Mujeres. So tell me, just tell me real quick what that is.
Sure. So Entre Mujeres is a transnational project between women in Los Angeles, Chicana Latinas in Los Angeles, and Veracruz, female musicians in Veracruz. When I was 9 months pregnant, one of my teachers, Laura Rebolloso, said, we need to write some songs, let's write some songs. And I was so big and tired all the time towards the end of my pregnancy that, you know, she would basically, she came to Los Angeles, we had a couple gigs, and then she would stay at my house and we'd write. So Entre Mujeres is a finished product, basically. We recorded 3 songs, we never finished anything. And once I had my son and he turned 3 years old is when I decided to finish the project. And I was able to do that through a Fulbright Garcia Robles Fellowship. And so Entre Mujeres was about going into Mexico. I lived there for 9 months, and the goal was to sort of ask whoever was willing, the women in the movement, whoever was willing to record original ideas, it didn't have to be son, that to come and join me, like, let's write something together. And some of them did, some of them didn't. But the ones that did, you know, we came up with great stuff. They were nervous, but, you know, they're like, I've never done this before. And I'm like, it's super fun, neither have I, let's just do it. And so basically all the songs reflect one or two of the women's ideas around childbirth or the chocolate trade, you know, or, you know, wood and the importance of wood in the music and the tradition, about love, of course. And then some are even about giving birth, about being pregnant and feeling heavy. And so it's a range, and it's a beautiful project. So you know, in hindsight, I realized that we were never a group, and I knew that. This is more of an archive in a moment in time in that highlights the kind of transnational dialogues that have been going on. It's not just this one. There's all kinds of people that have written stuff, you know, and we're just one of those folks and groups and moments that got together and decided to record something. One of the songs that I'm my most favorite, and we'll play it tomorrow, is called Chispas. Laura Rebolloso had been doing a little bit of research about how the chain gangs had music in the South, and those that spent their, you know, sweat, blood and sweat to build the railroads, right? How the chain gangs were particularly important to that, but how they utilized music to, you know, self-motivate and motivate each other. And so she was listening to a lot of blues in Los Angeles when we were there. And she decided, I put the chords together, the first part, the verses, and then she just did this whole amazing thing to it. And she's an amazing jaranera and an amazing singer. And so she wrote some of the verses, and so did I. And it's just a great, I love the tune because it's, I feel like it was her version of what she felt the blues was, like what it sounded like to her. And so I could hear that. And then she also is very jarocha, so the influence is very son jarocho-like. but it grooves so hard. The bass is amazing, and it's so much fun to dance to, and it's just rocking, you know. And to have that come from this little mom of three was just really cool.
Musical. People are bringing something musical from the U.S. too.
Absolutely. Well, there is, you know, that's one thing we said early on when we had an encuentro in 2003 with them. They thought we were the kind of folk communities that would come in and take a whole lot of information and stuff and never look back, like researchers that often have done. It's a very colonial practice, right? Very inherent. But we weren't doing research. We're a bunch of young kids that loved and respected the music and wanted to learn more about it, and we saw it as something that could be very viable in our communities. And so that's the first thing we said, like, look, we're not trying to be jarocho, and you know, we have our own culture. We're Chicanos, Latinos, we have our own history, our own culture, our musical trajectory. What we want to do is start a dialogue, and I think we have musicians here. I've been invited many times to quite a bit amount of recordings from the jarocho side. And then we have bass players that have influenced here, a Chicano bass player, his name is Juan Perez, who has influenced that side the 10 times over. A lot of guys play the Son Jarocho because of the way he established it. What else? You know, there's the strings they play that everybody plays are made by this guy. Now he lives in Tijuana, but he used to be in East LA. It's called Guadalupe Custom Strings. Those are from East LA, and everybody plays them. He's constantly sending them back through this informal network with friends, so on and so forth. The way we do things, the way we help support this, but then also how when we show up in Mexico, how gracious they are and how they host us. You know, we've exchanged ideas. It's not just organizational ideas, but also musical ideas. And you know, it's I think we've had a sonic influence on them as well.
This has been Sounds of Unsung Californians, a production of Radio Bilingüe. It's part of Sounds of California, a radio series that captures the music and voices of the ever-changing California soundscape. This program is produced in partnership with the Alliance for California Traditional Arts, with funding from the National Endowment for the Arts. Additional support comes from the California Arts Council. Special thanks to Brava Theater for hosting the festival and collaborating and recording the concert. Jorge Ramirez and Maria de Jesus Gomez provided production assistance. Samuel Orozco is the executive producer. I am the producer and host, Zadie Stavely. This is Radio Bilingüe.
Albahaca, ruda y cedrón, aromas que el campo daba, sonidos del corazón que salen de mi tonada, esos somos y esos son, caña dulce y caña brava, caña dulce y caña brava. Nada en el...